So I have a sad thought for you this morning. Taylor Swift was right. We are never, ever getting back together. Like, the community that you felt this weekend, like, we were never, ever gonna be together in the same room together, like, all the specific people. I honestly will probably never see, like, most of you ever again, which makes me sad, because I really appreciated your generosity and graciousness this weekend. So I wanted to share with you 10 of my top 10 things I enjoyed about this retreat. So I made images for this, but you have to imagine them now. So I'll give you my top 10, and I'll describe the images to you. Number 10, my first impression of this weekend was this epic DIY mic stand here. I mean, doesn't that make you feel good? These are the engineers of tomorrow. These are the people that will be developing bridges tomorrow. So that was epic. So kudos to whoever did that. That was epic. Number nine was, I want to give thanks to the worship team. I thought the whole weekend, I thought there'd be another worship team because they keep leading session after session after session. I was like, wow, that's a lot of work. So thank you to the worship team for all of your service this weekend. It's not lost. Thank you. Hopefully you heard some of the beautiful harmony that was woven there, so thank you, it's epic. Eight, this is what I put on the screen, I'll explain it. This is number eight that I enjoyed about this weekend. I called it Diarrhea Delight. And what I mean by this is, I don't know if you noticed this yesterday when Ivan was going over the rules, and he mentioned diarrhea, almost without a hitch, like many of you were like, ah, diarrhea, and I don't know if you like know about each other's GI system or something. But it was like you all became quite alive and pointing and saying Max and stuff like that. So I'm not sure what was going on with that. Number seven was being thankful for our small group leaders. I got to know some of them over the weekend. Just the willingness to serve not only this weekend, but other weeks out of the year and years as well was a gift. So I wanted to make sure you thank your small group leaders for their service, not only this weekend, but just in general. It's very helpful. Number six were the games. My first impression on the first morning was this. Blue moon, this salt pepper, that window, blue moon. And I'm still trying to figure out, what does that even mean? And then the second one, oh, we have it. Can we jump to number six? Yeah. Yeah, so the game, that, well, I don't know if that was me or you. Also, not only the blue moon one, but I've still been thinking about this. How many pineapples? 14, that's right. I'm like, I don't quite get that one. Yeah, I know. 14 billion? That's right. You're wrong. I don't know. That's right. That's 60 billion. So this is not working, if you can help me. This is a picture during the pumpkin patch game yesterday. I was just thinking, like, and this will sound like an old man thing, but like, you don't get to do this later on in life. Like, when you're 50, you're not going to call up 40 of your friends and say, do you want to play pumpkin patch? No. Like, it's just what a gift to be able to do that on a beautiful day. All right. Number five. Hey, you made it, right? Like, you were fresh looking Friday night, today. Your parents will recognize you, but you might be a little bit scruffy, but you made it. What a gift. Number four that I enjoyed about this weekend was the scenery. Again, if you grew up around here, this is nothing new, but it's just beautiful. Like, in Indiana, we don't have these things. What are those mountains that we call them? Mountains, right? So, like, we don't have that. It's just lovely here. And so it's so beautiful here in the Northeast. So what a gift. Okay, this next one is important. Number three, I have to explain this. I really appreciate the sneaky names. Let me unpack this. Okay, so this is CGCM and CGCW. So as an outsider, I'm like, okay, obviously there's a letter that's different between the two. That must mean that CGC equals CGC, but that's not the case. CGC doesn't mean CGC, and it's kind of confusing. I don't really know. If you can tell me why, it'd be great. That's right. Number two. Oh, I don't know who made the theme logo, but I enjoyed it. And actually, Ivan sent this to me about 2 weeks ago, and I said, I don't know if you can read this. I said, fire, fire, fire. Nice. I like the cactus. Don't miss the cactus. You notice the cactus. Look, cute cactus right there. That's AI. Thank you, AI. What would we do without you? And finally, what I've enjoyed most about this retreat, what I will remember the most, is number one. That's right, you. That's right. So just thank you for letting me join with you this weekend. It's been fun to get to know so many of you. And so what a gift that's been. So thank you. All right, here's the question for this morning. Would you rather be an underdog or a favorite? Favorite or an underdog? Let's do a quick vote. Would you rather be the favorite? All right. How many of you want to be the underdog? All right, defend your response. Favorites, why would you rather be the favorite? All right, what about the underdog? Who wants to be the underdog and why do you want to be the underdog? That's fair, that's fair. So quick story. Growing up in Indiana, we're always the underdog. So for example, let's just do a quick quiz here. Which state is Indiana? Okay, A. Okay, B. C. D. Okay, some of you think D, all right. B. E. Who says E? Who says F? Yikes, it's actually E. Yo, exactly. Nobody knows where Indiana is. It's E. I can verify it's actually E. D is actually Illinois. F is what? Ohio. B is A is Iowa. C is okay. Whew. Yeah, but so most people don't know where Indiana is, and if they do know where it is, like this YouTube video came out just a few weeks ago. Can you see it? It says the runt. Like, we're just like this random state that nobody knows about and not many people live into compared to our neighbors. And if you know anything about Indiana, it's kind of like an underdog. We have sports teams. What is our NBA team called? And who did they beat last year? Oh, sorry.
Who would they get swept?
And then who's our NFL team? That's Colts. All right. And so, like, they're not major markets, but we have teams, but they're not major markets. We have business, but we're not Wall Street and we're not Silicon Valley. We're just kind of there. For tourism, people don't come to Indiana. People say for like spring break, let's go to San Diego. Let's go to New York City. Nobody, you will never hear anyone say, let's go to Indiana for vacation. In fact, I catch myself when people do come to Indiana for business or to visit family, I ask them something like this. I say, oh, have you been to Indiana before? But even as the words fall from my lips, I catch myself because I'm thinking, of course you haven't. You would never come to Indiana unless you have a purpose here, unless you have family or business here. Like, you just don't go to Indiana. That said, and growing up in Indiana, I have to argue that it's a hidden gem. Like, there's so many good things about Indiana, and I mention that because the book that we've been walking through this weekend, namely Numbers, is a hidden gem. Like, even if you grew up in church, I would not be surprised if either you didn't know there was a book called Numbers, or B, you've never even read even excerpts of Numbers. But now you have, and hopefully you've seen the story of God in Numbers as, oh, there's actually some helpful things in here. Like, Numbers is a hidden gem. Like, when people read the Bible, like, they get on this kick. They say, let's read Genesis, or let's read the Gospel of Luke. Nobody says, let's read Numbers, right? Like, it's just this hidden gem that people walk over. So we're going to wrap up our time together by looking at Numbers 26. If you have a Bible, I encourage you to open it. Help your friend find Numbers 26. So we've seen the story of God as unfolding in the book of Numbers. We've seen things about God in between delivering his people out of Egypt right before they go to the promised land. He is big and majestic and grand, but he's also personal, kind of like our devotional this morning. He's father, but also judge. We've seen that he's holy. We've seen the nature of sin. We see redemption through Jesus ultimately. And today we wrap up by thinking about his faithfulness in two different aspects here. So Numbers 26, this is the second bookend. If you remember, on Saturday morning, we talked about how the book of Numbers could be divided with Numbers chapter 1. There's a census, and that first generation is about to go to the promised land. It's all optimistic and awesome. Things go awry around chapter 10 and 11 and following. And then in Numbers 26, you got that second bookend. There's a census again, but now it's that second generation ready to go and preparing to go into that promised land. So we're going to see more of God's faithfulness here, faithful both in terms of judgment and in terms of blessing. So let's take a look at some excerpts here from Numbers chapter 26. Follow along, and then we'll unpack it. So Numbers 26, verses 1 to 4. After the plague, the Lord said to Moses and to Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, take a census, another census, of all the congregation of the people of Israel from 20 years old upward by their fathers' houses, all in Israel, and who are able to go to war. Verse 3. And Moses and Eleazar, the priest, spoke with them in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, saying, take a census of the people from 20 years old and upward, as the Lord commanded Moses, the
people of Israel who came out of the land of Egypt were, and just skim, you can see a bunch of names, and then let's drop down to verse 56, after all these names, verse 51. This was the list of the people of Israel, 601,730. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, verse 53, among these the land shall be divided for inheritance according to the number of names. And verse 54, to a large tribe you shall give a large inheritance. To a small tribe you shall give a small inheritance. Every tribe shall be given its inheritance in proportion to its list. But the land shall be divided by lot. According to the names of the tribes of their fathers, they shall inherit. Their inheritance shall be divided according to lot between the larger and the smaller. And then finally, let's look at verse 63. These were those listed by Moses and Eleazar the priest, who listed the people of Israel in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. But among these, there was not one of those listed by Moses and Aaron the priest, who had listed the people of Israel in the wilderness at Sinai. And finally, for the Lord had said of them, they shall die in the wilderness. Not one of them was left, except Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. So one of the big ideas that you see here is the idea that God has been faithful to two things. He's been faithful to judgment, just like he said, as well as blessing. And let's start with this idea of judgment. You see this idea that God was faithful to judge his people like he said. Take a look at this first verse. There's two clues about judgment here. After the plague, the Lord said to Moses and to Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest. The first clue towards judgment here is plague. There was a plague. We didn't read it, but there's a plague in chapter 25 because the people of Israel, again, fell into sin. So he judges his people. But there's also another clue here about God's judgment because the Lord said to Moses and Eleazar, the son of Aaron. Wait a minute. What happened to Aaron? Well, if you know the story, Aaron dies in chapter 20, just like God said. Because in Numbers 14, God says, dead bodies shall fall in this wilderness, and all of your number, listed in the census from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me, not one shall come into the land that I swore I would make you dwell, except Caleb and Joshua. In other words, Aaron dies because he's part of that generation who grumbled against God, and God says you're going to die, and he dies. So even that first verse, you see God was faithful to keep his word. He judges his people. He judges them with the plague in Numbers 25. He judges Aaron, like he said, because he dies in chapter 20. But there's also in this opening verses, God is being faithful to blessing as well. Take a look at the text here. So God is faithful towards blessing in verses 2 through 4. We already read this, but just to recap, God calls them to take a census again. But why? Why do they need to take a census again? In short, land. They're about to enter the land, and they need to take a census. In the text, it says, take a census, verse 2, those who are ready to go to war. Because they're about to take over the land, they're going to fight now, so they've got to take a census again to get ready for war. There's that practical aspect to that. Further, if you look at verse 3, where are they? They're by the Jordan at Jericho. They're right across the way. They're about to go into the promised land. So you see that picture here of taking a census is God has been faithful towards blessing. Because like he said in the past, you're going to take this land and they're about ready to get in that land. The second reason it's blessing here, and we'll talk about this in a second, is they need to divide up the land. And that ties into how big each tribe is, and how big each tribe is ties into the census. So God will lead his people into the promised land just like he said. Little recap from Saturday morning. Remember, back in Genesis, God promises Abraham, I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. Chapter 15, look towards the heaven, number the stars. If you're able to number them, so shall your offspring be. So remember, back in the Old Testament, God promises Abraham, I'm going to give you a people. But that's not all that God promises Abraham. Like we said previously, he also promises not only a people, but a land. For example, Genesis 15, to your offspring I will give this land. And he talks about it, from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates. The land of the Kenites, Kenizzites, Kadmonites, Hittites, Perizzites, and Rephaim, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, and the Jebusites. And just in case you miss it, in chapter 17, God says the same thing to to Abraham, I will give you and to your offspring after you the land of your sojournings, all the land of Canaan. So again, God has promised in Genesis, Abraham, I'm going to give you people and I'm going to give you land. We see the people, we got a census again, lots of people. He's also going to give the land as well. So even recounting this time, the second census is a reminder of God's faithfulness to bless. I'm going to give you this land. The census, which shows that the Israelites have multiplied as the Lord has promised, also makes clear the Lord can be trusted to keep his word regarding the land as well. So even in those opening verses, God is faithful to judgment. He judges just like he said he would, but he's also faithful to blessing. And those twin themes of judgment and blessing are woven throughout the remainder of our text. I'll just highlight a few of these places where you see both judgment and blessing. God is faithful to judge, like he said, and to bless, like he said as well. And as you walk through the remainder of this text here, it's kind of like a mixture of those two things. Not dissimilar to, for example, let's say your parents are celebrating their 25th wedding anniversary, and you create a slideshow of the last 25 years of their life. And you gather as a family, and you're watching the slideshow, and there's some really happy memories. Oh, there's cousin so-and-so when he was born. Wow, wasn't he fat and cute? But there's also some sadness. Oh, there's grandma. Grandma passed away in 2019, so there's sadness. So as you walk through the remainder of Numbers 26, there's, wow, God is faithful towards blessing, some really high points, but there's also some sadness because he's also judging. So for example, if you look at Reuben, verses 5 through 11, talking about the lineage of Reuben, you see some judgment. Let me just drill down into the lineage of Reuben. It picks up and says this. The sons of Eliab, Nemuel, and Dathan, and Abiram, chosen from the congregation who contended against Moses and Aaron in the company of Korah when they contended against the Lord. Remember back in Numbers 16, Korah's rebellion. So from the lineage of Reuben, you have judgment come upon some of his descendants because they rebelled against God's anointed leader. But also in the lineage of Reuben, you see blessing. For example, in Numbers 26, verse 7, these are the clans of the Reubenites. Those listed were 43,730. So we're going to do some math now. When you compare that with where they began in Numbers chapter 1, they were 46,500. In other words, God has been gracious. Despite the rebellion that happened to some of the descendants of Reuben, more or less this people group, this clan, is about what they were then. So God judges some of the descendants, the descendants of Korah, Korah's rebellion in Numbers 16, but he also blesses. He continues to keep that clan alive. So you see judgment and blessing with Reuben. But in some of the descendants, you see a little bit more judgment. For example, think about the descendants of Simeon. Verses 12 to 14, let's do some math here. We find out in verse 14, at this point, the Simeonites are 22,200. Now compare this to where they were in chapter 1, 59,300. That's a big drop-off. Now some would suggest, right, oh no. Some would suggest that this happens because of what happened in chapter 25. We didn't read this, but basically Israel falls into sin, and look who's one of the ringleaders of this. The name of the slain man of Israel who was killed with the Midianite woman was Zimri, son of Salu, chief of a father's house belonging to the Simeonites. So in other words, what happens is God's people fall into sin in Numbers 25, and someone suggests the Simeonites are at the core of that. And so they get judged particularly harshly, which is why they go from 59,000 to 22,000. Oh no, as was appropriately voiced. But overall, you see blessing, because when you compare where Israel's at now with where they were then, it's okay. Again, some more math. Now they're 601,000. Before they were 603,000. In other words, God has kept this people. Despite going through a full generation, the people of God more or less are about where they're at. And this is despite all the judgment that they wrought upon themselves because of their own sin. Blessing is also seen in a second way in terms of verses 52 to 54. Take a look at this text again. Lord spoke to Moses, among these the land shall be divided for inheritance according to the number of names. To the large tribe, give a large inheritance. To a small tribe, give a small inheritance. And so in other words, this is another affirmation of God's blessing. He's going to divide these people up so that you can give them land. To a larger tribe, you give a larger part of land. To a small tribe, a smaller part. And so even this census is a reminder of God's faithfulness. It's kind of like at some retreats I've been to, they give you a ticket for lunch. You gotta exchange that ticket to get into the cafeteria. That ticket isn't the lunch itself, but it reminds you that lunch is coming. And so when the census pops up here, and we're talking about dividing up the land, that's kind of like a ticket. It's not the land itself, but it's a reminder. God is faithful, and you're about to enter the land. And if you got a big tribe, you're gonna get a lot more land. But if you got a small tribe, you're still gonna get land as well. And finally, in verses 63 to 65, the very last section we looked at, again, there's judgment and blessing intertwined. There's judgment because a whole generation doesn't enter. Did you hear it? Not one of those listed by Moses and Aaron the priest, they don't enter. And that's reiterated. One of them was left. So in those final few verses, we're reminded that first generation gets wiped out, but it doesn't end there. Did you see the last phrase we read? Except Caleb and Joshua. There's this remnant here. And so God blesses still. He still cares for his people as well. So here's the big idea. God is faithful. He's faithful to judge. He judges like he says he would, but he also blesses and he keeps his word. So that's both a warning and an encouragement. It's a warning. God will judge. And in fact, in the New Testament, the author looks back on this section of scripture and draws out this warning. Again, the warning was, look, this generation will die. But in the New Testament, look how the author from the book of 1 Corinthians, Paul, thinks back to this season. So from the New Testament perspective, looking back on this season where they wander in the wilderness, where they fall under God's judgment, he writes, now these things took place as examples for us, that we might not desire evil as they did. Do not be idolaters as some of them were, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Verse 8, we must not indulge in sexual immorality as some did, and 23,000 fell in a single day. We must not put Christ to the test, as some of them did and were destroyed by serpents. We saw that last night. Nor grumble, as some of them did, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Verse 11. Now these things happened to them as an example, but they were written down for our instruction, on whom the end of ages has come. Therefore, let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. So in other words, from the New Testament perspective, this whole account of the Israelites back in Numbers, part of that is a warning for us. Like, don't be like them. Look, they fell to all these things. Guard yourself against that. Avoid sin at all costs. Don't treat it lightly. So God is faithful to judge. That's a warning. But God is faithful in his blessings. That's an encouragement. Israel will enter the promised land. Israel still has a good size. God is faithful to do what he said, even all those years before to Abraham. So two questions I want to leave with you at the end of this retreat. Question number one, which do you need to hear? Again, there's two themes here. God is faithful both in judgment, but God is faithful also in blessing. Some of us need to hear that warning, frankly, that God is faithful in judgment. Like right now, you're adjacent to Jesus, but you don't embrace Jesus. For example, if this is a Venn diagram of life and faith, you know, for some, they're just totally separate. But my sense is for not a few of you, there's a little bit of overlap, right? Like Fridays, Sunday mornings, retreat, like there's a little bit of overlap there. You're a part-time Christian. You have a lot of days off, but you're still a part-time Christian. Or you've heard the acronym, right? A CEO Christian, Christmas and Easter only Christian. Or I made up another one, MBC Christian, marry me and bury me Christian. Like, you want the church to marry you, the church to bury you, but beyond marriage and bury, just don't mess with my life. So some of us have a little bit of overlap there, but I think the goal here is not to make just faith kind of peripheral, have a little bit of overlap, but rather to have 100% overlap here. Life and faith are indistinguishable. Like, my life is Jesus. Jesus is my life here. So just watch out that we don't just treat God like a hobby, an extracurricular to pad our brag sheet, to make us look like moral people to get us into our college. So maybe we need to hear that first one. God is faithful in judgment. Watch out. Don't just play with him like a hobby. For other of us, you need to hear the second idea. God is faithful in blessing. Like, it's an encouragement to you. But either way, that leads to that last question here. how do we need to respond? It's interesting. In the text, God, as usual, is the hero. But did you notice as well who is, from a human perspective, affirmed? Over and over in the text, it affirms Caleb and Joshua. Caleb and Joshua, verse chapter 14. Caleb and Joshua, 26. Caleb and Joshua, 32. That raises the question, why are Caleb and Joshua singled out here? Well, they were faithful. But how were they faithful? Here's what one scholar says. If we ask why Caleb and Joshua were faithful, the answer is that they believed the Lord was faithful to keep his promises. This shows that our obedience is not rooted in our strength, but in God's faithful character, a faithfulness that is all the more clear today because of what we have seen the Lord do in sending Jesus. They believed God, and it reminds us that a weak faith in a strong object is better than strong faith in a weak object. Even if you have just a weak faith in a strong object, you're better off than having a strong faith in a weak object. For example, let's say you're climbing up the mountain, and you fall, and there's a tree that catches you. Even if you have weak faith, I don't know if this tree can catch me, but even if you just have that weak faith and you stay there and rest in the tree, you'll be okay because the tree is strong. Your faith might be weak, but that tree is strong because weak faith in a strong object is better than strong faith in a weak object. It's better than trusting in myself. I can clean myself up. I can make myself right. No. When we trust, even with a weak faith in Christ's redeeming work, we're going to be okay. And hopefully, the faithfulness of God breeds faithfulness. Like you see, well, God has been faithful, therefore I can, in response, be faithful. Even these meager first steps. There's an adage when you have like a young kid, sleep breeds sleep. Like if you get that newborn to sleep, he or she will sleep more. And that flywheel will start to rotate. In a similar fashion, when I follow Jesus, his faithfulness hopefully will breed faithfulness in me. That I, in response, will respond in faithfulness. So what's next for you? There's a video I saw a number of years ago. I'm going to show you this video. And let me set it up, and then you can hear it again here. This is a video that rings true, particularly after working with a lot of Asian guys over the years. This video talks about different phases that every Asian guy goes through. See if this resonates with you, because I think it does. I'm going to add one more to this as we kind of land this plane.
These are seven phases that literally every Asian dude has gone through, all right? Every Asian dude, it has had an anime phase, a K-pop phase, a video game phase, a self-healing phase, not a good one, but everyone has a workout obsessed phase, a hip-hop obsessed phase, and then an EDM phase.
So let me just review those. If you know any Asian guys, an anime phase, a K-pop phase, a video game phase, a self-hating phase, a workout obsessed phase, a hip hop phase, and an EDM phase. I'm gonna add one more. Over the years, like I've seen so many of these phases in the Asian guys that I've known, let me add one more phase. One more phase that I've seen is the Jesus phase. So literally, we had a retreat very similar to this, and it was that last night, like the last night before the retreat's over, and it was a very emotional night and a kind of a spiritual high. And there's this one guy who has gone through many of these phases. He came up to me and said, "Oh, that was great. We got our spiritual high. We can go home now." And I appreciate his honesty, but it was very clear that, at least from that data point, Jesus was a phase. Like, we got this now. Oh, Jesus is not meant to be a phase in your life. He's meant to be a Lord and Savior for all of your life. And so just as you move into your family groups, your church groups here, you have to be asking yourself, is Jesus just a phase? Is this spiritual high that I may have had this weekend, is it just that? I mean, that's okay to have a spiritual high. How do we build upon that? How do we put stakes in the ground so that 5 years from now, this was not all for naught? It wasn't just another phase. In your handbook, there's a question to walk through. How would you respond to this? I am, I believe, I will. My hope for you is that you fight for faith, that you're not passive. This morning in our leader chat, we talked about retreating so they can go forward. So we've retreated for three and a half days now. How do we go back rested but also stronger and faith, more faithful than before? And one last thing, and I'll close with this. Retreats for some people can be a spiritual high. For others of you, you feel nothing. And that's okay. At least for me, I've learned over the years that oftentimes what I glean from retreat comes days, weeks, months later.
as God in His grace kind of reminds me of things I learned, of things we sung, of conversations I had, or things we just experienced. So if you're not in that spiritual high, totally fine. I think God will continue to be faithful and help you glean from this in the days, weeks, and even months to come. So I'm going to pray for us, invite the worship team to come up. Like before, we'll take some time just to be quiet, and then I will close this. So let me just start by praying for us here. Father, what a gift it's been to be together this weekend, to see more of your story, to learn more of who you are. We've seen both how grand and majestic and big you are, but also how close you are to us. We've seen your holiness and our sin, but we've seen your redemption as well through Jesus. Father, I pray that as we wrap up, that you, through your Spirit, would lead and guide us, continue to lead and guide us, that we can, particularly as we move to our church family groups now in a moment, with clarity and charity, be able to articulate next steps so that whatever we've experienced this weekend would not just be or stay in this weekend. So, Father, even now we take just a few moments to be still before you and just reflect on what's next, to reflect on that next step. And friends, if God brings something to mind, feel free to write it down so you can capture it now and share it with your friends in a moment. Let's just take a few moments just now just to be still